It is. Well, we're done with Milano Sanremo, but we're going to talk about it because it was an exciting race. It's Tyler Yonke, Between Two Wheels podcast, episode 321. Welcome, everybody. I hope you had a good weekend. It's St. Patrick's Day here in the U.S. of A., which means alcoholics have a reason to... I didn't get it. I drank myself silly today, but not because it's St. Patrick's Day. Victor, show is on. Welcome, Victor. Thanks for being here. Welcome, everybody. Like I said, Between Two Wheels podcast. We're going to talk about Milano Sanremo, 288 kilometers long, 178 or so miles. That's a pounding in the legs, people. That's pretty brutal. And I hope you checked out episode 320, where we talked about the breakdown of the show. And what I mentioned, a lot of the people I mentioned are in the top 10. Probably all of them I mentioned in the top 10. I did pick Mads Pedersen. That did not happen. But we will talk about, I think he's just off a little bit. I mean, what did he do? At 178 or so miles, almost 300 kilometers, you're going to have a little bit depleted legs at some point, okay? And the guys that we did have with these ones right here, the top three, they did not have those legs. Or they're and this is what's amazing about a race like this, which is it puts you into a position where a person like Pogacar can sprint with the likes of Michael Matthews, a pure sprinter like Jesper Philipsen, and yet beat out Mads Pedersen. It's phenomenal, and this is why this race is a great thing. But you have to basically skip the first 240 kilometers. I mean, it was early morning. I'm on the West Coast. I opened my phone. I woke up for some reason at 4 a.m. Turn it on. I look at the pro cycling stats, and I see where they are in the live feed there, and it's like 188 kilometers. And I click, I'm going back to sleep. I went back to sleep. I woke up. It was like 6:30, and I'm like, oh shit, what did I miss? I turn on. It's like I think it was like 80 or so kilometers to go, and I'm like, or 100 or so, and I'm like, perfect. So I started watching it from there, and it was didn't disappoint. Once again, inside 50 kilometers, they do these little. I'm trying to remember the names of these little. And maybe we'll get to it here. Maybe we'll get to the actual racing, and then I'll talk about some the highlights. So we'll have to go to that. There we go. It was fantastic. So it's everything you expected. And what did I predict here? What did I talk about? I said you're going to have a problem with the fact that McNulty is not there. Okay, and what I meant by that is if. Well, it's a UAE. If they want to do 9-minute Chipressa, then what you're going to have a problem with is not having McNulty. And I talked about Isaac Del Toro, the Mexican rider for UAE, which is he's great. And people got all excited about how he rode at Tour Down Under, perfectly fine. But if you watch him at Tour Down Under and then you watch him at Torino Adriatico, one thing you notice is his positioning on the climbs. And people see him when Jonas takes off. I'm trying to remember, it was stage 3 and 4 or 4 or 5, whatever it was, the climbing ones there. He's barnstorming and you're like, oh my God, it's amazing. He started so far back, it's not amazing, okay? What is amazing is, yes, unless you're going to do Strava segments, then he's amazing. Other than that, you have a problem with his positioning. You don't have that with McNulty. And since you don't have that with McNulty, it was going to always be a problem. I talked about that. I did review the Horner stuff. Horner said he had a problem with that. Thank you, Brian Zimley. And congratulations on your weekend, by the way. I went and watched cycling. Horner suggested Pog lead over Espresso to save Wellens for lead for the Pargo. I saw that. I don't dispute. And it depends on where. I mean, look, assuming Pogacar's legs are exactly how they are, that he didn't come into the finish. He said... I think this is where Horner is absolutely correct. And we'll talk about this race, actually. Maybe we'll break this down. I'm going to have to do like we always do. We kind of just jump cut on videos here. Started out. There you go. There's the route. They had a 100 kilometers, 171. I don't know what this thing is doing. So they started in this town of Pavia, I think it was, state of Milano, due to financial reasons. 200 and some kilometers. You had teams taken off in the front there in the breakaway. Of those, you had three Pulte riders, and these guys weren't going to make it anywhere. Everyone knows this. It just depends on who's up the road. It was all your third category teams. And whatnot. However, 40, and you can see this here. I'm trying to remember the name of these climbs here that we had early in the, oh, the Capos. There's two Capos, Capa Mille and Bene, I think they were. And UAE did ride hard over those climbs to soften everybody up and to try to deplete the field. Fine, but the problem is between the last Capa and the, and there was a break still off here. They shut this break down from like 2:30 to almost 1:30 going over this first Capas, going into the Chipresa. And as they had that, there was a crash in the middle of the road. Christophe Laporte, who I said was probably going to get fourth, he was my fourth place pick. He gets spit out the back. I don't know what happened other than maybe he got caught behind the climb, but he did not look good. What you had, though, between these Kappa climbs and leading into Chipresa was UAE was nowhere to be found on the front of the pack. This was problematic. This is exactly what I talked about earlier, which is if they're going to lead this up and over, you've got to have the team right, because what you're going to do is you're going to just decimate the field going up the Chipresa. And when you do that, you need to have your team at the front and solidified so that when you go over the Chipresa, they're still in a there, right? Covey, Wellens, Hershey, Isaac de Toro, we already said Wellens, and then you have Pogacar, and there's probably one other guy. They're probably missing like a Pulte, Niels Pollitt, sorry, and they're definitely missing a Brandon McNulty, who can destroy the field going up this climb, this, what, 6 to 8%, 7%, I think, climb up the Chipresa, which is longer one than the Poggio, but it's about, what, 30 kilometers into the finish, and it's like, what, 3.6% kilometers in length, or I think it's actually 5-something. I think the Poggio is 3-something. But he could destroy that field going there, just decimate it, and he could do it alone, and he would start the bottom of the field, the climb in place. I talked about this. I said this was a problem with Isaac de Toro. Everyone gets excited about him, but positioning means something. So what do you have here? You have the bottom of the climb of the Chipresa coming in. Trek, they're all there. Then EF Education is there. And who else is there? Well, skipping ahead a little bit too much. Pogacar is there, but his team's not there. Then next thing you know, it's like, well, he's like, we got to do something. Covey's basically taken over. But the problem is, and you can see this spread down the field, which is Isaac de Toro is way back there. He's got it. And I wish I had done the time on this one. He's got to do a lot. And you can see it here. If you look, he's like right now, we'll count up. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. So he's 20 people back, and they're 4.6 on the Chipresa. They're already deep in the, you know, in the early stages, and it takes him a while to get up there. By the time he does, then Covey breaks off. Now you've got Isaac de Toro, but the whole dynamic has changed at this point. And what happened is going over the top of the climb, you had a problem. And that's what Brian just said, is which is Horner suggested Pog league over the time. As Horner was mentioning here, you can't have Tim Wellens do any work at all on the Chipresa, because you've got to save him for the Poggio. Now, why is this so necessary? This race is all about, if you want to strike lightning in a bottle and you want to have Pogacar win the race, which UAE wants to do, a few things have to come into part, which is he's either goes solo over the Poggio, which you come down in, you got, what, 2 kilometers to go, and he solos in there, or he comes over the top with someone he can beat in a sprint. Now, we saw in the sprint that he could beat almost anybody, but he can't beat Jesper Philipsen, and he can't beat Michael Matthews. Now, last year, he couldn't beat Matthew van der Poel. So, and we'll talk about kind of the why this came into, to in a sense, the problematic portions and where Matteo van der Poel switched. And I think you'd want to give him a big hug, because I think he did great work. Now, Isaac de Toro, great ride. You did big burst over the Chiprassa. That's perfectly fine, but you didn't do it when you needed to, which was at the bottom to relieve. Maybe Kobe comes in. Maybe Kobe doesn't do what he's done. Maybe he's able to go over the top with the climb with everybody, and there you go. So the team failed on many circumstances. You had also Mark Hershey between the Chiprassa and the Poggio when they did catch the pack, and then there's one guy off the road. He's never going to make it. Bastiat or something like that. Where Mark Hershey chases him. It doesn't make any sense. So there's problems all the way around. And at the end of the race, Pogacar says our team was off 10%. This was the easiest race ever. He says that, which is batshit crazy. But anyway, Brian Zimniel says Del Toro went 2/3 up Chiprassa, then cracked. Pug had to call up Wellens early. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, so they went over the top. Their field was completely reduced. It was fantastic work, as it should have been, but it didn't work enough because you had guys that were still in the mix, such as Jasper Philipsen. However, I don't want to diminish some of the rides of the other people. Now, they went up the Chiprassa something like 928. It wasn't the fastest ever, but it's pretty damn fast, okay? And you can see at the bottom that there's problems. There's issues at the top, exactly what Brian says here, where they actually had to call on Wellens to come to the front to finish off the climb at the Chiprassa. It was, they could definitely make it scientifically more if they were trying to make a better showing up the Chiprassa to destroy the people a little bit more. However, you, as I said in my review, which is if you look at Alpecin Phoenix, you've got obviously Mathieu van der Poel. He hadn't ridden a race at all this season, but I mean, that, those are people saying that, people pontificating about that. They're saying that because they know anything, but he did cross. The first race of the season for Pogacar was Strada Bianca. Did he look like he was off? Now, Van der Poel may not have been as sharp as he was last year, as he said, but he was not bad. Okay, so you've got problems here. Okay, so then there's the gap. They come into the Poggio, and Tudor Racing for Trentin, they were leading things in there. It's like Del Toro, maybe take a page out of their book and learn how to lead out into these. I don't know what's going on. You may not be able to fight up the, and this happens. I mean, I've raced for years myself, which is sometimes you're just like, I'm going to wait. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to relax. And sometimes that hard fought time that you need to do is more important, when it means like get into the climb. The first part, you're going to have to do a lot of work to make sure you're staying there. You may not be able to work your way up the climb as far as you had been, but it makes a much big difference than at the bottom mile or kilometer where you're doing like 600 watts to catch on. So anyway, that's the problem. They come into the Poggio. Well, first of all, the team Trentin does that, but then Pogacar says, well, let's get up here. And he comes over there. There's two attacks. I mean, the thing was weird here. Look at it. You could just see here. Stuyvesant is there. Mads Pedersen is there. Sobrero is there. That's the only guy I said, by the way, of Bora Hansgrohe. I said, Sobrero's been riding well. I picked him as well. Bettiol, we just had him on Milano Torino. Matteo Benderpol, obviously Wellens. Pogacar is up there. Ghana, Pidcock, I mean, Mads Pedersen. You've got all the people that I was actually mentioning. But less than a kilometer to go, Pogacar does take an attack. Everyone's able to basically sit on his wheel. You have a random movie star guy that kind of comes in there, sits in the front, and then it breaks up again. And then Pogacar goes again. And he goes over the top with a little bit of a gap, but Van der Poel is able to go with him. Then they go down this climb, or this descent. And this is a famous descent down into the portion of San Remo, where you've seen people like last time or a few times ago. Van der Poel last time actually had a gap over the top solo, and he went and was able to solo himself to the finish, the last 2+ kilometers. You had Bahrain Merida's, or at the time Merida, but now it's Bahrain Victorious. Mateo Mohoric, he's gone down this thing, flying down here. But Pogacar's going, Van der Poel's on his wheel, and Pidcock does an amazing, because he's obviously a daring descender. He catches up to him. They all kind of come. Ghana doesn't look so good coming down this thing. But evidently, Jasper Philipsen radios into Vanderpool and says, I've got great legs. Slow this shit down. don't go over too fast. They come down into the main portion, and right before they come onto the finish here, you can see this coming onto the finish. Matej Mohorič takes a flyer. And this is the problems you've seen here all along, which is they're coming down to the main section, 2 kilometers to go. And if you have random guys out there where you don't have a sprinter or you don't have teammates, who chases? It does favor the brave to go up the road, right? We've seen that over and over. And because who's going to chase? You're going to put yourself on the front to chase this down. Immediately, though, Vanderpool goes on the front because why? He knows that he has Jasper Philipsen. By the way, reigning world champion, reigning defending champion of Milan Sanremo, you went over the top. You caught Pogacar, who distanced everybody. You are obviously on flying form. You have great legs. And immediately you turn into a teammate for your teammate, Jasper Philipsen. Kudos. Kudos to him. Not many. And we're going to talk about one of the most psychotic people in cycling history, Lance Armstrong, a little bit later. This is something Lance would never do. And I'm just saying that he would never do that. And hardly a lot of people wouldn't do that in the place of Vanderpool, but Vanderpool does. There's a good distance here. He chases down Mohorič, and then Sobrero kind of just drifts off the front. Pidcock takes a little bit of a flyer, goes through Sobrero, has some distance, comes into the last 100 kilometers, and he's looking like maybe he's going to be the one. They have the little chicane back and forth. But once again, Vanderpool is chasing everything down. On his wheel, though, is Stuyven, who's leading out Mads Pedersen. You're looking great there. Then you have Michael Matthews. Then you have Mohorič back there. You have Philipsen. You have Van Gils. You have Alaphilippe. You have Bettiol. These are all the top 10 guys coming in. And then they start the sprint. Now, I think if there's one thing that happened that should not have, or maybe did a bit of a tactical error, is Mads Pedersen going right here. Stuyven goes up the middle. Mads Pedersen goes far right around the outside and doesn't use the slipstream just a little bit longer than he needed to. Now, at the same exact time, so Mads Pedersen goes to the right of his road, left on our screen as we see it. Michael Matthews goes on the right side, his left on the screen. Or on the road, and he goes hard, and Philipsen goes to his. Now, Michael Matthews immediately is looking good. He puts kind of Philipsen into the barriers. He could have closed the door, but then Philipsen would have come around. I think it's really good that this did not end up in a sprint deviation, because Michael Matthews started to close the door on him, and he was obviously deviating around his line. You don't like to see that. You don't want to see the officials get involved. Pogacar comes right up the middle. Mads Pedersen had gone on the outside. He's not able to do it. Bettiol's not able to do it. They are getting distanced by Pogacar. But the two up front, which is Michael Matthews and Philipsen, go to the line. Michael Matthews dropped. His sunglasses fall out of his face. Go down to the ground. People are running over him. Doesn't matter. He doesn't miss a beat. And it's a bike throw for the finish. And Philipsen gets it. And Pogacar third. And it is, we could just kind of look here. Then you've got Mads Pedersen fourth. Bettiol fifth. I think Bahrain Merida's or Bahrain Victorious. Matej Mohorič is sixth. Seventh, Van Gils. Eighth, Stuyven. Ninth. I think that's Alaphilippe, 10th, Matthew Vanderpool, 11th and 12th would be Pidcock and Sobrero. So everyone played a part in this thing, and it was fantastic. So obviously Philipsen gets excited. There's hugs, and we'll talk about this. There's hugs and high fives from Pogacar, from Michael Matthews. Here we go. Philipsen, Matthews, Pogacar, Pedersen, Bettiol, Matej Mohorič, Van Gils, Jasper Stuyven, Julian Alaphilippe, Michael Matthews. I'm sorry, Matthew Vanderpool, and then I think it was Pidcock and Alaphilippe. Oh, no, Alaphilippe was 9. So whoever was out there. Sobrero, that's the other one. So there you go. There's the guys on the podium, and they're... Look, evidently... These guys all live in Monaco, okay? I think Jasper Philipsen and Pogacar are really good friends. I listened to the cycling podcast that Pogacar and Michael Matthews are really good friends. They actually drove there together. And so I don't know about Matthews and Philipsen, but it was a freaking bike throw for that. So Brian says, number one, most influential rider in the race, Matthew Vanderpool, number two, Stuyven. Yeah. teams, it was very important. And the other ones that you had, the teams there, were Ghana and Pidcock. Pidcock takes a flyer, which was very dangerous. It looked like he was possibly going to win at the time. But I don't think Ghana was anywhere near what he hoped to be this time and what he actually was last time. So he wasn't able to play a part, which is, okay, your guys up the front, it's basically like a lead out. If they want to chase, they're going to have to chase, and Ghana can move, but I just don't think Ghana was where he's at. I will also say Mads Pedersen, you can see up the climbs when things were happening and the guys had to close gaps. Mads Pedersen was not closing those gaps as easily as others were. He's a guy with a kick, and he was not able to kick close those climbs, those gaps. Immediate, when I'm seeing him going up the climb and I'm seeing gaps being done in front of him and he's having trouble to do it, I'm immediately thinking, oh, he's going to have problems here at the finish, which he did. He was better than he was last time, but he wasn't up to the snuff and what he needed to be. Once again, when we talk about 288 kilometers, 300 kilometer race, a person like Pogacar, who's fit and has some snap, he can actually out-sprint a person like Mads Pedersen, which on most days he wouldn't be able to. We talked about this in the previous show, which is you've seen in the Tour de France, Michael Matthews and Pogacar going at it on uphill finishes that are short, quick climbs, and Pogacar's had him. This time, though, it was Michael Matthews was impressive. You didn't think about him all day. I had kind of written him off because he's getting older. But man, he was a bike throw away from getting the win over Jasper Philipsen. But once again, you've got to give the credence and the credit to Matthew van der Poel. He said at the finish, he's like, look, he told me he had great legs. I trust him. I trust that he is honest to me and not just blowing smoke. And he's like, and then he delivered. And he absolutely did deliver. So when you've got a guy that you've let out in the Tour de France, what, for four wins in the last Tour de France, and he's got those results, and you're Matthew van der Poel, what are you going to do? You're not going to out-sprint him yourself. Are you going to look like an ass trying to do something else? No, you chase down two moves that you had to go all in on. And in the end, you got your guy, and it was a bike throw. It was touch and go, but it was there. So great result for Jasper Philipsen. He's on a contract year. Is he going to get signed up? Is he going to go to a different team? I'd say stay. I mean, you've got Matthew van der Poel, who just buried himself for you. Matthew van der Poel is the one that makes this team, as far as they're the one, this is the reason why you basically get contracts here. Who do you know on that team besides Jasper Philipsen or Matthew van der Poel? You don't. So I would say stay. You're winning with them. The team is doing you solid. So Pogacar, third place, great day. You're off a little bit because the only way you're going to win lightning in a bottle is if you come over the top and you come to the finish either solo or with a group that you can outsprint. You can outsprint these guys. You've shown you can outsprint Mads Pedersen now. You can outsprint Ghana. You couldn't last year. You did this year. You did a great job there, but you're going to finish it up a little bit different, which means you're going to have Tim Wellens for you the entire climb on the last bit. You're going to have Brandon McNulty kill it for you on the Chipressa, and you don't have a Zec DeToro coming from trying to get a Strava leader, Strava times or whatever there. So there you go. Milan San Remo. Top American, by the way, was Kevin Vermaaka. He was, I think, 48th. Luke Lamperti was back away as like 4 minutes. Kevin Vermaaka for DSM, he tried his way and it did pretty good, but I think he got dropped on the Poggio. And so he was a top American. The other ones were like 4 minute backs. He was like a minute 48. And Luke Lamperti, hey, you've done the race now. You get a little bit of idea. I think that's a guy that we can look for coming up in the future. Maybe we'll take a look at some post-race interviews. Do I have any here? Julian Alaphilippe. Who do we want to listen to? Maybe we'll try Pogacar. So I'll bring this one up here. He did say, Pogacar did say, hey, this was the easiest ever. So let's see if he says it in this one.
Happy with the shape, I'm happy with the team, really good work, and yeah, in the end, it was not a perfect execution of the plan, but...
Why?
Yeah, because we didn't win, but I can be happy with the third place in the sprint against Michael and Philipsen. Pedersen and other guys, it's I can be proud also on this, and yeah, we keep looking forward.
You did everything to win. You deserve to win, but it's difficult to win here.
Yeah, it's very difficult to win, but I know I can, and I will not give up on this race. I really want to, but I didn't say the final word in this Milan San Remo, so I will come back even better prepared.
A word about the winner, Jasper Philipsen, because you know him.
Yeah, everybody knows him in cycling, but he's a good friend. Also Michael, so I must say it was. I can be really happy on this kind of podium. It's really a dream. When I did on Wednesday training with Michael and Mohorič together, Bling said, "Oh, imagine us three on podium," and actually it was not that far. Mohorič was sixth, so he should be closer, but. Still, Philips and Michael and me on podium. I must say it's a dream scenario for friends like this.
Thank you, Patrick.
Okay, and we'll talk about that a little bit because I think that's important when we discuss Lance Armstrong and kind of his stuff that he's talked about. So do I want to see any of these other interviews? I don't know. We're gonna get to skip now. Remember, Wildfinder wasn't there this year. What I love about Pogacar is the fact that he's like making a big deal about this. It means that Milan San Remo, if you think you want to come there and you want to just, it's never an easy situation, but he's putting a lot of look into it and he's not a sprinter guy, so he has to do things a little different. And when he does those a little different, it means a lot of prep, a lot of planning, a lot of teams coming into this. And with that, it means that it's an important race. And I really hope that others take this mantle on. Now, Victor asked me a personal question. Have you been spinning miles? Yeah, I went today. I rode yesterday. I've been doing, 5 hours or so a week. So trying to get the time distance back up. I went and watched my teammates race yesterday. Jeff Scott won over our buddy Brian Zimny. Got second in a nice bike throw. And then Jeff ended up today getting fourth in the road race. And so I think for the Omnium, he ended up winning it overall. So good. Yeah, I'm getting back there. I appreciate you inquiring, Victor. What I want to talk about now is the fact that you have these guys on the podium. And you just heard Pogacar then talk about his friends, okay? And the fact that they did well. And he's like, it's a dream. I don't know what you say, a dream podium. Now, I was watching Lance Armstrong's podcast here yesterday, We Do, and he had some comments about this. And he also had some comments, and we'll play those comments here that he was on a separate podcast. He mentions it here, but I thought it was important first to play his comments on his own podcast and kind of his buddies on there. And then we will talk about the others. Okay. Brian says, it was good seeing you, but I didn't get that hug. Oh, I'm sorry. I would have given you that hug. I'm sorry. It was good seeing you. It was good seeing everybody. And I was really proud. Brian, by the way, you did a good race. There's some good finishers in there, and your bike throw was spectacular out there, and it was pretty close. So I really, congratulations. I was glad to see you get on the podium there. Okay,
and it just says a lot about Vanderpool, his putting his ego aside, working for the team. This is a plan. He didn't say exactly how his legs felt, but he said, when Philipsen said, "I've got legs," that's all he needed to hear.
Well, I tell you, and that brings, I'm glad you brought that up, JB, because I was, I got a little grief last week. I put up this post of, I did Danny Duncan's podcast. And for those who don't know, Danny Duncan's he's a young, famous YouTuber. He's a funny kid. He's a great kid. I love it.
Never heard of
him. I said on the podcast that I just don't understand how these guys can compete. And then when the race is over, they're sort of high-fiving and hugging. And which is true. I don't regret saying that. In fact, I'm about to say it again. But all these fucking nerds who cover cycling, did you see these articles? What are you, write about something else. Who cares? So Philipsen finishes and he finally figures out that he wins. He's basically celebrating with the camera, which was hilarious. That was the only person there. And you see a hand come in. And I'm like, okay, here comes Matthew Vanderpool for a big hug. No, it was Michael Matthews. And then it was Pogacar. And then I'm thinking, okay, what the fuck is going on here? I don't get it.
In your day, if you didn't win a sprint and you were edged out, you probably couldn't get to the bus fast enough.
Right? Just keep moving. But I'm not passing judgment. I'm not.
Yes, you are.
But anything. I'm just saying, I don't get it.
Not just.
Okay. So we went to a commercial there. What I want to play then is Lance Armstrong. So he was on this other podcast. Let's get to the full comments he had, because I think it's important to actually hear what he said on that podcast. It created kerfuffle, and it made people want to write articles about it. And I made some comments on Twitter as well about it. So here you go. Here's Lance Armstrong talking about
this generation now. Like, these guys go hammer, race each other, and some guy will lose. The guy who wins is waiting at the finish line. They're fucking hugging it out. I'm like, what? You're just waiting there so you all can hug this out?
Yeah.
After you just lost? I'm not saying that our generation, that was the way to do it, or that I was proud of. I mean, I think it's kind of cool to see, but it wasn't like that for us.
Yeah.
Never even crossed my mind. I do think our generation's racing was better.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when people actually hate each other too, it's just like way better to watch.
And we didn't hate each other, but like, even for me, like, nobody ever did anything to me that would have led me to be like, I hate this motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like, nobody, but I would make things up, like read an article or read a quote and be like, well, I guess I could read it a certain way. Like, okay, well, fuck them.
Generation. So now. I think that's one aspect there. Okay. So let's go on a little bit more when he says, I never hated anybody. I didn't do those kind of, let's just double check to see if that's actually correct here. So I've got another video here. This is a 2000 Tour de France stage 18. QR Lance Armstrong. Let's go to 1.25.
Well, stage 18, 166 kilometers from Annemasse to Lons-le-Saunier, was more about what Armstrong thought of other people than what they thought about him. It was a wet start in Annemasse with the forecast changeable, the boss of the race and the leader of the pack exchanging formal pleasantries before the official off. And it might be Jean-Marie LeBlanc's event, but on the road, Armstrong makes the rules and enforces them when he needs to, which he did early on in the stage. What happened was that Filippo Simoni tried to attack to join a six-man breakaway that had built up a bit of a lead on the peloton. The trouble is that Lance doesn't like Simeone, who was actually suing him for slander in Italy after Armstrong called him a liar. I won't bore you with the details of the case, but suffice it to say that Armstrong didn't want Simeone to get into the break, and he personally rode across the gap to make his point. I'm not sure in which language, he speaks a bit of Italian, and the result was that Simeone returned to the field, having apparently been told by Lance to sit at the back and shut up. That's the kind of authority the patron of the peloton has, and Lance is not afraid to wield it.
Okay, I think we need to stop there and just back up just a tad bit to see, maybe we won't be able to do that. Okay, a few items there. One is, Lance says, first of all, did you watch this finish and see three good friends not compete against each other? How do you have a bike throw where it's literally like, I don't know, a quarter of a bike, of a wheel that is the difference for the finish that Philipson gets over Matthews, get a little bit of an elbow in the finish. They bike throw. Pogacar gets there, tries to attack all these guys. What did you see in there where you're like, you know what? This would have been an amazing race if these guys weren't actual friends. If they were not, if they didn't have social skills. Now, remember what Lance said there, and this is very important. He said he made up stories. He read into things about news things that he would then use to motivate him, because he's a fucking psychopath. Lance Armstrong is a psychopath, and that's the reason why he had to use these things. People have friends. You saw these guys, they're friends on the podium. There's nothing about that race where you're at all think that they didn't lay it out on the line. He chased a guy down who said he was doping. He was a fucking loser, cheater. And the guy is suing him because Lance says that's false. So he sues him for defamation. Simeone was absolutely correct the whole time. Lance is a fucking psychopath. And there you have it. Now, Lance doesn't understand that. So he comes back now to 2024. It's 20 years since his time he chased down Simeone, and he's had no ability to contemplate, to rethink these things, to make changes in his life. He's still the same complete asshole that he always was and always will be. And you know what? It's really difficult to understand, to actually think in your mind, Is cycling better now? Would Lance have won all those races? I don't know, because he cheated so bad. We can't even tell. Yeah, everyone cheated, Lance. I get it, okay? There's some people that didn't. Some people that went home, they gave up their career because they weren't going to do this. You had no compunction to do so. You said, it's much easier for me to fucking put a needle in myself or put a blood bag in here to rip Landis, to rip Tyler Hamilton after the fact, to chase Simeone down, to say people are lying. David Welch, the writer, you're going to sue the Guardian and all these things. And you're going to get all these judgments against you. And you are so fucking cool, because you know why? You made up stories about guys that didn't hate you so that you can race better, because you weren't good enough otherwise to do that. You had to be able to chase them down because somewhere in your mind, they were fucking Cheryl, whatever her name was, the singer that you were bagging at the same time. And somehow that worked out better for you. Yeah, you are a fucking psychopath. And to see these guys on the podium and to know that they are friends and they can still compete at a high, high level, the fastest Milano San Remo ever, almost breaking records up the Poggio, up the Sopressa. But you know what you have a problem with? You have a problem with they gave each other a high five after the race. Because why? Because your brain is dead and you're a sick man. So there you go. That's all I have really to say about that. Brian Zimmy says, Lance is like Darth Vader. He sees friendships as weaknesses. He's a complete weirdo. Okay, that's really what it is. If I'm done racing and I have problems, like Brian raced with against our guys this weekend, my team, and afterwards we love you. You're a good friend of ours. It doesn't mean that at any point in the race we are giving you quarter and it, you know, sometimes you give someone the wheel because you don't dislike them so much, but it doesn't make sense. It doesn't happen in this realm. And for Lance to still be doing this, I'm sorry. It's Tyler going off. That's what it is. Okay, what do we have here coming up now? We have the Volta al Catalunya, and then we have Tour of the Basque, but this is what's coming up tomorrow, and I will be interested to see kind of where this race comes about, because you have Sepp Kuss and you have Pogacar coming in here, and I think for me that those two will be exciting. First day, it looks like it's just going to be probably a breakaway day, but everything here in this region is going to be helter skelter. Next day you have 186 kilometers, but a decent climb up to the finish. That's for stage two. Stage three, three categorized climbs and HC at the finish. You're going to see Pogacar trying to light it up, and it will be interesting. And then stage four, it's going to be a breakaway. Stage five, breakaway. That's the last one here. Stage six, that's into Barcelona. Stage six is going to be a climb. We get a winner out of the Pogacar type. And then stage seven is actually really interesting coming into Barcelona. If you could take a look at this bottom section here, it's a circuit and it's just climb, 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 climb. I have always loved this one. It had that steep climb up to kind of the finish there in town. So that will be exciting to watch. Whew. Jeff needed water today before the finish. I handed him my bottle. If only, Brian, you had been online last night and you had seen something that Jeff had posted, maybe about his family and his son, you would say, oh my God, I have girls. He has a boy. I hate him. I don't know, something like that. To be a complete psychopath. I'm sorry. I I've kind of been more forgiving. I've gone through all the tours and I've actually thought to myself, perhaps Lance Armstrong deserves these tour wins. And then I listened to Greg LeMond and Greg's like, oh, whoa. His VO2 max has never been good enough. His power numbers are wrong. I think he was using a motor. And I'm like, okay, I don't know, Greg, but that's you bring strong points to your calculations here with his ability to climb, and that he never had power numbers, and his VO2 max doesn't work into the equation, right? That does make sense. And then you have Lance saying these kind of things where it's just, and he's like, don't judge me. And I'm like, why you keep bringing him up? Of course I'm going to judge you. And by the way, the only explanation is you're once again a psychopath. So there you go. Victor says Lance has a self-titled book. Lance, would you review the book? I don't, Victor, what are you gonna have to read a book? First of all, Lance didn't write it. I know he had a ghostwriter. His first writer, Sally Jenkins, I think that's who it was. she's such a stan for him. It's really pathetic. It's like, I don't know. It's like someone who lies so much. Do you really care? They're not going to be super honest. I did enjoy Hamilton's book, a few other ones. I thought Jonathan Vaughter's. By the way, I did a review of Jonathan Vaughter's book where he breaks down everything. But what he just seems to, he doesn't even mention it, which is Tom Danielson's positive at the tour of, after the tour of Utah. Actually, act the tour of Utah, where he has a positive result and he doesn't mention it at all. And it just blows me away that that would happen. So I think you should check that out. That's pretty solid. Okay. So who's going to win Catalonia? I don't know. It's going to be fascinating for me to see a few things. One, Pogacar, we already know what kind of form he's on. He's on fantastic form. He's going to be there, and it'll be interesting to see if he can put out a seven-day, one-week stage race like you've seen Jorgensen. Remco's done a short version of that. And then obviously Vingegaard has been able to do that. So it'll be interesting to see it. And then it will also be interesting to see two other factors for the Visma team, which is Sepp Kuss, how's he going? And Kjaan Otterbricks, is he going to be the next big thing? And is Sepp going to be falling into a role where he's just backing up Kjaan Otterbricks? Or is Otterbricks going to be have no other choice in the Visma team, no other choice but to follow and to help Sepp Kuss out? Last thing I'll say is there's a documentary out about the Visma team that was on Amazon, but it's not available here in the States yet. I will wait to see it. Evidently, I would love to see, because just initial reports that people have written about, it sounds like well before all this shit hit the fan, once Sepp Kuss had the red jersey, that Vingegaard actually says, status quo, let's keep it as is. And up from that spot up until the Angrelus, stage 17, Primus was like, no, we're racing for ourselves. And then the team stepped in after Angrelus and said, nope, fuck you all, we're riding for Sepp Kuss. So, which makes me think, okay, Vingegaard up the Angrelus, we can take into account, perhaps he was just like, I don't know what to do, because he had that weird feeling. But I think the asshole in this whole thing really comes out to be Primus Roglic. He's on a Bora-Hansgrohe now. But if they figured out anything from today, the biggest asshole is who? That's right. Lance Armstrong. All right, everybody. Till next time, we will check in with you on the Volta a Catalunya. And what have we learned for this? Lance Armstrong is a psychopath. And besides that, I don't know. Everyone have a good time. Thanks for tuning in. Till next time. Next Sunday, definitely we're going to tune in next Sunday, maybe before.
Froome now, he goes on the offensive, he goes on the attack over the top of this final climb, and nobody at the moment can go with him.
He had 75 kilometers to go, and now under the Flamme Rouge, there he is still, the virtual Maglia Rosa on the road. Who would have thought it at the start of today? But Chris Froome, masterful performance, takes the win on top of Sergio Aguilar.